This old smoke-filled bar is something I'm not used to. But I gave up my home to see you satisfied. And I just called to let you know where I'll be living. It's not much, but I feel welcome here inside. And I've got swinging doors, a jukebox, and a bar stool, and my new home.
Linoleum knife. I'm home. I'm back.
What's that joke? If you play country music backwards, your wife comes home and you get a job.
Yeah, I've heard that joke.
What was that?
It's a good joke. It's a real funny joke, too.
What was that?
It's a cool joke, bro.
Yeah, well, that song was pretty archetypal.
It was Merle Haggard. That's why it was archetypal.
Okay, well, there you go. Yeah, this smoke-filled bar is not familiar to me. My eye. You walk in, and you're like Norm in that place.
I just got back from Texas. And when I'm in Texas, I listen to 99.5 The Wolf the whole time I'm there.
Really?
In the rental car, yeah. New country. New country for new country people.
It's a wasted opportunity not to be listening to KEOM.
No, it's not. I get plenty of that when you're with me. At any moment that you are with me in Dallas, Texas, I know for a fact that we're going to be listening to KEOM. And it's soft 70s sound.
Unless we have satellite radio.
Unless we have satellite
and then
radio.
We are, and then and the house and music then it's was all created.
Progressive house music, yes. But when I'm alone, just with me and my thoughts in the rental car, 99.5 The Wolf. New country music.
Well, new country is not playing Merle Haggard, I assume.
No, but there was an ad on the station in between the crappy new songs that are on the new country radio for a show with Merle Haggard and Hank 2.
Boo.
Yeah, I think that would be a great show to go to.
Hank 2 is
all
a
your
jerk.
Rowdy friends would be there.
Hank
2
is a low.
He's a tool, but he's not Ted Nugent. I mean, you've got to stratify these people somehow.
Fair enough, yes. if we're gonna have a scale
there's
here.
There's still something inherently lovable about Hank Williams Jr. There's nothing lovable left about Ted Nugent, if there ever was.
All of my, and whatever affection I had for Hank 2 has now been transferred onto Hank 3.
Hank 3 is great.
So, yeah.
Anyway, we can't fiddle-faddle about today. We did a lot of fiddle-faddling the last time I was on the show. I know you and the illustrious Alinda Wheat did. Did you say her name like that?
I didn't. I should have thought of that. That's a great Love and Death reference.
Fields of Wheat.
Did you? I know you guys kept it short and sweet last.
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. We did not
and
meander quite as much as you and I.
I'm at fault for the last time
for podcast Alexander Platz.
Yes, when we it was like a 100-minute episode, and that's wrong. We may never do that again. I clocked it. We didn't start talking about movies
for a good half hour.
For almost seriously, almost a half an hour into the show.
You, by the way, are Dave White, film critic of Movies.com.
And I'm going to play football for Notre Dame. I am. First, I just have to go into junior college and get the grades in junior college. And then I work with the janitor. And then I get into Notre Dame. And then I get on the practice team. I'm going to play for Notre Dame.
Thank you, Rudy.
We watched Rudy. My mom and I watched Rudy this week. I don't think she had ever seen it. And pretty much anything goes with her now. Like, you can show her any movie now because she's just happy to be sitting there with me watching any movie.
Oh, great. So next time you'll bring La Jetée.
Yeah, exactly. So, no. But what I do know about her my whole life is that she loves
inspirational sports movies.
She loves Matt Damon and or Jason Statham with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
If that is not available, or if she has seen all of them, mm-hmm. and she has.
She hasn't seen Safe.
She hasn't seen Safe yet, but Safe, I think, is out on DVD mm-hmm. right now, but...
They didn't have it at Target.
Either they either did not have it at Target, or Target wanted like $24.99 for it mm-hmm. or whatever. No way. And so...
hell no.
Yeah. And so I went to the $5 wall.
Right.
There's always something good on the $5
wall.
Oh,
yeah. I always look at the DVDs in the grocery store, and there's always at least one movie where I'd be like, okay, this is actually...
And she loves, you know, she loves, like, underdog inspirational sports movies. She's not a big sports fan.
No.
She's kind of like me, in a way that I don't actually care too much about sports.
We like
but,
sports
oh,
movies.
Man, do I love sports movies. And so, and Rudy is the greatest sports movie of all time. And I defy anyone to tell me otherwise. I thought, I wonder if she's even seen Rudy. And even if she hasn't, I mean, even if she has, who doesn't want to watch Rudy again after they've seen it once? It's like a potato chip. You must continue watching it again and again.
Like Jim on the Newsroom, yeah. I have never seen Rudy.
You are a bad person. This is a clear indication to me of the lies that I've been being told.
Are you even going to introduce me on this stupid show?
Hang on just a minute. We'll get to that.
You're the worst.
I feel like I've been sleeping with the enemy all this time.
You never asked.
You never said.
It's never.
You never told me.
It has never come up in conversation.
You never told me that you had never seen Rudy.
Well, as someone who
I would have given
Rudy,
it a lot of thought.
As someone who hasn't
this relationship Rudy, would have been on a whole lot of shakier ground.
It never
early
occurred to
on.
Me that Rudy was a thing that mattered if because I'd never seen Rudy.
So great. He's so little. Anyway, you're Alonzo Duraldi, and you've never seen Rudy. Also, you are the so-called film critic of TheWrap.com, who's never seen Rudy. And also, a contributing talking head. Are you Fat Beardo number one or number two on What the Flick?
Well, as I told Matt Atchity, we're all Fat Beardo one in our own lives. We were once referred to by a YouTube commenter as Fat Beardo 1 and 2, which then, of course, prompted the discussion of which one of us was 1 and which was 2.
We've already determined who's number 1 on this show.
Exactly.
And that's me. But
you're fat, but you're not much of a Beardo.
Like, I'm genetically incapable of being a Beardo.
Anyway, the show that Dave was talking about but never getting to is What the Flick.
What the Flick.
No, you didn't.
I said What the Flick.
You got distracted talking about Fat Beardo stuff.
You didn't know. You're not listening to me.
We're going to play it back.
And you haven't seen Rudy, and you're not listening to me.
You gaslighted me about Kevin Smith, because you talked about it with Bibbs and not with me, so...
Look. Right now, in my mind, you and Bibbs are interchangeable.
Oh!
We've become very close.
I don't even have a response to that.
Did y'all talk about Hope Springs last week?
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
What did you talk about, you and Alinda?
About how you're a jerk.
Wheat.
And you're sleeping in the guest room for the rest of your life for saying that I'm interchangeable.
I hope Alinda's not listening because she's now we're goofing on her last name.
She's a big girl. She can handle it.
She's awesome.
And she brought champagne, so...
Y'all drank champagne?
Yeah, we had mimosas.
I haven't listened to the show yet. Mm-hmm. Mostly because I wasn't on it.
Yes.
If things don't have to do with me, mm-hmm. I don't often see the point.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
And so I'll eventually get to the show that you... fill me in on what you guys said about Hope Springs. Because that just opened.
Yeah, well, it opened Wednesday, so we thought we'd go ahead and talk about it. We both liked it a lot. It's pretty much...
We're going to get right into movies. We're going to get talking right about movies right now.
I'm not going to tell you, because look, people...
For a good reason.
A lot of people who listen to this show listen to last week's show, so if you didn't bother to do the reading, we're not going to go backwards for you, Dave White. You go listen to the show and find out for yourself what Alinda Wheatley said about Hope Springs.
I kind of liked Hope Springs.
I liked it very much.
Did you guys talk about Coldwater Creek?
Not specifically.
You should have. Because it's a very important...
plot element.
Thing in that film. Coldwater Creek is a very important sort of signifying element, I think, of Hope Springs.
Back up from the mic a little.
It is a Coldwater Creek film in many ways. And as much as I liked it. Mm-hmm. It's a movie for nice ladies.
But I think it's too smart to be cozy. It sounds like you're accusing this movie of being cozy.
No, it's not cozy at all.
Well, then it's not a Coldwater Creek film.
It's actually very sad.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got all kind of moved by it.
It's not. It is a movie that takes.
I felt sad for Meryl Streep. I wanted her to have a good husband who, you know.
Yeah.
Do it to her.
Give it
to her one more time.
It is a movie that takes seriously the stuff that a lot of American movies don't take seriously, particularly about older people. And they're certainly advertising it in a way to make you think that it's just like, woo, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Naughty I know. Grandma, you know, but it's smarter than that.
Yeah. But not much else has opened this week.
Well, there were two biggies. Bourne Legacy.
Yes. Not so Bourne-y, really. Different, a much different Bourne-y version. Let me start all of those sentences over again, because I'm not speaking English very well right now.
By the way, if you're wondering about all the background noise, it's hot today.
Every window and door in our apartment is open right now,
so
including the front door. So any of our neighbors walking by will be like, what are those two jerks doing there sitting and talking to microphones with headphones on? Because they'll be able to see us through our front door.
If there are yappy dogs or, you know, like woo girls or anything going down the street, you will be hearing them. So we're just letting you know in advance.
It's 1,000 degrees here today.
Well, you just came from Texas.
Where it's 2,000 degrees. This feels like a nice reprieve from the 2,000 degrees that Texas was.
But we have no air conditioning, which most of the year is not an issue.
Yeah, we live on the right side of the hill. We live on the ocean side of the hill. We don't really need air conditioning. Except for days like this.
Right.
And there are, two dozen of them throughout a year?
About that. That sounds right. Yeah, a couple weeks worth.
No, wait, that's 24. Two dozen is 24.
Okay.
We might have like 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Of days like this during the course of a year.
Yeah.
And we feel it.
Yeah.
Then we need to go to Gary Cotty's pool is what we need to do. Mm. It's three blocks away. Excuse me.
Bourne.
Yeah, not so Bourne-y. When I think Bourne, I think of something else. And this was not the thing I was thinking of when I walked in. I still kind of totally enjoyed myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think of the three first Bourne films, even though they were all at least co-written by the man who directed this one.
Tony Gilroy.
Tony Gilroy.
Basically what happens in
Bourne. Oh, you're not going to let me finish? Are you going to?
God.
I was going to have a sentence there.
Okay.
You
don't like to give plot synopsis, and I thought we needed to throw one in before we got to.
Oh, you want to do that? All right, go ahead.
I don't have to.
Plot synopsis. Do it.
You're all, I don't know how to explain that stuff as good as you do, so you do the plot thing, and then I'll come in and talk about why I thought the movie was awesome or not.
Plot synopsis, please.
Fine.
Please.
So.
Please, Alonzo.
Jason Bourne has basically gone public, as we know, from the last movie. And so, because all the government agencies are freaking out and trying to cover their tracks, we come to find out that he was but one of several super spy.
But one.
God. You're an idiot. He was merely one of several super spies created by the government and sent off into the world. And now that the media is paying attention and Congress wants to have hearings, they decide to clean up their tracks by basically eliminating all of the agents and all of the doctors that worked on making them all super. But they don't get Aaron
Cross,
played by Jeremy Renner, who literally comes in from the cold. The movie begins with him like out in the Yukon somewhere.
And who, like Rudy, is short. I stood next to him once in a line in Subway, the sandwich establishment.
Jeremy Renner.
Short dude.
Hmm.
Yep. I mean, okay, not as short as Sean Astin,
no.
Who is a hobbit.
Right.
Literally.
but
you know, short.
What year was Jeremy Renner eating at Subway?
The same year that Dahmer came out, whatever year that was.
Oh, back then, okay.
Yeah, because Dahmer had just come out, and I looked, and I stood next to him and was like, how do I know you? And then I was like, oh, yeah, you're dumber. I mean, I didn't say that to him. I don't talk to anybody in public ever. But
so you got to watch Dahmer eat.
I did. And there was no, you know. By I think the way, he got the veggie sandwich, which is what I get when I'm there.
By the way, if you've never seen Dahmer, it's really, really good. And Jeremy Renner, like Jeremy Renner, you know, ever since Hurt Locker has been like the thing.
Superstar.
The It Boy, and you know, he's in all the movies. I have been waving the banner of Jeremy Renner for like the last decade, ever since
you've been waving the Renner banner.
The Renner banner. Ever since seeing Dahmer. So go see that movie. It's really
the amazing. Renner banner due to Dahmer?
Yeah. I've been waving the Renner banner due to Dahmer. And, it seems like it would be just like a cheesy exploitation flick, but it's really well done, and he gives an extraordinary performance in it. I'm still waiting for the day that Jeremy Renner and Jeremy Renier do a movie together.
They need to meet sometime.
Yes.
And fight.
Yes. Or make sweet love. Either one. Depending on who's directing. If it's Francois Ozon, they need to make sweet love.
You need to explain who the other cat is, because I'm sure a lot of people who listening don't know.
Jeremy Renier is a French actor who's in a bunch
he's
of
He's in stuff. A lot. I mean, he's a well-known French actor.
He
works a
lot.
Actor.
We see him a lot. He was in Summer Hours, right?
Yes.
And he was in...
He's in everything.
What's the movie with...
if it's French, he's probably in it.
What's the movie that came out last year with Catherine Deneuve and Gerard Depardieu where she's running the... Where she's the housewife... The
Ozon movie.
Yeah. The
Potiche.
Yeah, so anyway, we want the Jeremy Renner, Jeremy Renier crossover. anyway, so basically he manages to elude being assassinated by the government, and he tracks down Rachel Weiss, who is the last living doctor who survives this on-site massacre, in the hopes that she can get him the tiny pills that will allow him to stay super.
And he's just hooked on dolls.
He's not nutty. He's just hooked on dolls. And so in that, the cue the globe-trotting chase, you know, that's basically what the movie is. But the thing is, to get to all to that nugget of plot that I just described, there's a whole lot of Edward Norton screaming at Donna Murphy in boardrooms in front of computer screens.
Yes.
Lots of it. It's like, I remember I loved the first two seasons of The Venture Brothers. I thought it was really funny. It was really smart and just crazy. And then season three, it got super into its own mythology and backstory and started taking it kind of seriously and assumed that we cared a lot more about it than we really did. And I lost all interest. Tony Gilroy, who's been writing these Bourne movies, assumes that we're all dying to know all of the labyrinthine bureaucratic backstory of how these super agents got created. So there are
I was into it of
expository scenes
like
about
an
that
hour
stuff.
Like the first
Tons
hour
of it.
Like the first hour of the movie.
And I just thought, I don't really care about this. Could we chase some more? Can something blow up? I mean, it's not like I want all of my action movies to be big and dumb, but it's like, imagine if a 007 movie starts and you get your sort of like pre-credits action sequence, and then there's 45 minutes of M and Moneypenny, like, going over ledgers and working out spreadsheets. Like, this is not the movie I signed up for.
But I
not that that movie couldn't be interesting, but if it's a Bond movie, I want Bond.
I have a slightly different grump about this, but it's not really a grump. Because, like I said, I liked it. Mm-hmm. But the first three Bourne films were as defining of the last decade as they were defined by the last decade. I mean, they were decidedly post 9/11 films about, you know, the world gone mad, and about how, you know, the government is really just completely out of control and lying to you all the time, and doing terrible things, and this guy is suffering because of it, or maybe he was a part of it and you don't know because he's trying to figure himself out. But not just thematically, but stylistically, that whole Paul Greengrass, and in the first movie Doug Liman, the camera of those two guys and their cinematographers is chaotic and shaky and disorienting and unsettling, and the mood of those films, because of the way they were shot and because of the tone that they took, were all three very sort of unsettling films. They weren't happy action movies where somebody triumphed at the end. They were grim all the way through.
They were about not dying.
Yeah. And so I was super into all three of those for that reason. I am perfectly content when the big bad is vanquished at the end of an action film. But I'm much happier when there's no winning. And there was no winning at the end of those three movies. Mm-hmm. This movie takes a completely different turn down a whole other path. It starts out thinking that it's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and leaving you these little trails of breadcrumbs into, you know, something. And you better be paying attention because it will eventually spell it all out for you. But by the time it does, if you aren't paying attention, you won't know what movie you're sitting in. Because there's all kinds of people doing all kinds of stuff and saying a million different things, often in sort of coded jargon.
But I didn't find any of it all that interesting once it gets resolved.
And then, suddenly, after they explain it all to you, after they tell you what it's going to be about, then it becomes Torque. Although, it's not as awesome as Torque, because Torque is a masterpiece. And this just has the same sort of motorcycle chasing that Torque has. Now, again, I completely enjoyed this film because Jeremy Renner can walk up the side of a building and do sort of ballet on a motorcycle with Rachel Weisz hanging by what? Off the air. Like, there's nothing keeping her on the bike. And
her very powerful thighs.
Yes. And I knew what it was doing, and I knew where it was going, and I was happy to go there with it, even though it was two different films jammed together into one. But it ain't a Bourne movie. It's something else. It's kind of junky, and there's winning. Honestly, there's winning that's not what this is to me. That's somebody else coming in and saying, you know, Gone with the Wind 2? Okay. You know,
let's paint a smile on that broomstick.
Yeah. My thing was,
I wouldn't have minded all the exposition if it had gone anywhere interesting, but it just felt like another sort of, like, government conspiracy that we've seen in a million movies, and it didn't lead to any reveals that were, like, shocking or fascinating. It was just like, okay. So, you know, it just felt like can the balloon juice and get to the action stuff.
Renner is also a little harder to empathize with than Matt Damon. Jeremy Renner as an actor and as the action film guy that he is turning into seems to have a lot invested in being a tough guy. And you never really get that from Matt Damon. You get the idea from Matt Damon that he can be a tough guy, mm-hmm. if he's got to be. Mm-hmm. But he'd rather you just kind of be chill and leave him alone, you know? Mm-hmm. I get the feeling from Jeremy Renner in this recent, you know, chunk of his career that either someone is guiding him this way or that he has chosen this path, that he is going to be like Lee Marvin or Steve McQueen. You know, like he wants to be a tough guy.
I don't know. I don't get that. I mean, are you talking about like in Avengers Mission Impossible?
And the town and in this.
Well, the town. He's doing a whole other thing.
I'm just saying that's... Those are the roles that I'm seeing him in, the tough guy role. And I don't feel like that's everything he can do, and I don't feel like he allows himself to have any other emotion on the table but that when he's in these films.
I disagree. I think that what he and Matt Damon have in common is the idea of let's do an action movie where we don't take like a Jean-Claude Van Damme or Stallone type and turn him into and try and make
I'm not talking about a cartoon. Because that's what they are.
Can I finish?
Maybe. Psst, let's see if you got something to say.
You don't, or even Vin Diesel. You don't take like some big sort of, you know, lug and try and turn him into an actor.
Right.
You take an actor and you turn him into the action guy.
Yes. And that's what he is. He's an actor first. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't feel like he's just radiating the tough guy. I get I get as rich a... I mean, it's not the same thing that Damon's doing, but I get as rich
say
a...
Say it like they say it on Project Runway. Say rich like they say it on Project Runway.
Rich. He's giving me a tableau. I feel like there's a lot going on there. It's not just sort of one note, you know.
All right, I could be wrong.
You could indeed.
I probably not, but it could be.
Okay, fine. A very talented supporting cast that does literally nothing but yell at computer screens in this movie.
Yeah.
Edward Norton, Donna Murphy, Corey Stoll, Stacy Keach, Jelko Ivanek. Well, he gets to do a little
Albert
something.
Albert Finney.
Albert Finney. But yeah, it's like a crazy amount of checks going to people who will get to do Ibsen in the Park next year because they phoned this in.
Yes.
You know, and Rachel Weisz is fine. She manages to not be the girl, but also not be like crazily more powerful than
I'll
she
tell you what
be.
I really liked about Rachel Weisz, uh-huh. aside from the fact that I just am in love with Rachel Weisz.
She's pretty awesome.
Is that...
Although, did you not immediately think of Dream House when they go to her house and it's all like half built?
Kind of, yeah.
I immediately thought, oh, are we back in Dream House? Oh, no.
What I liked about her is that she asked, and not just asked, shouted while asking, all the questions a normal human being would ask when thrust into that situation. Like, who are you? What's going on? Somebody tell me what's happening. And she wouldn't comply until they did.
Right.
You know, that whole, you must come with me. Well, no.
Why?
I'm watching, you know, pawnbrokers right now. I've got agendas here today.
I've got a roast in the oven.
Yeah. Like, she responded like a real human person would respond when something crazy starts happening to their lives and, you know, men with guns begin chasing you. Like,
right.
I would like an explanation.
Yes, you always have.
Would someone please provide me a few details on why I have to jump on your motorcycle and run away from these armed men?
I should explain this joke. Dave White cannot take a left turn without asking 80 questions of anyone who
I don't
happens
think that's,
to be.
I think you're exaggerating.
In his presence.
You're exaggerating a bit. Quite a lot, in fact.
He always needs to know all the things, all the time.
I need to know details as they pertain to my well-being, my safety.
To the point where friends...
The efficacy of the project we're involved in.
Friends point this out, not irregularly. On a fairly common basis, it's like, oh God, it's the Dave White third degree.
I need to know what's happening.
So Rachel Weisz is asking the Dave White questions.
She's asking all the questions that I would ask. Who are you? Where did you come from? Who sent you? Why are you here? What's going on? Why should I be involved? I've got nothing to do with this in the first place. Things like that.
I see.
You need to know things like that. I'm not just gonna get on the back of your bike, Prince. I'm gonna.
You would have asked if this was Lake Minnetonka.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. The campaign.
Funny.
Funny, yes.
Yes.
But it seems to me that if you're going to do a political comedy in 2012, when politics has become so much the currency of the land, like it isn't just this sort of obscure thing that only policy wonks are following. Like, people are involved in politics. Whatever dog they've got in that hunt, they are in it, and they know about it, and they follow it.
And they're Facebooking it.
And they're Facebooking it, and they're fighting about it, and there's crazy, crazy things going on, and we are entering a cloud cuckoo land of our own creation. If you're going to make a movie that's set in that world, and then you play it safe, and you hold back, and you just kind of go for sort of basic wackiness, it feels weird. Like, it feels to me like they should have just made a movie about two guys running for the presidency of the same Elks Lodge, because they didn't want to make a movie about capital P politics, because God forbid they might offend someone.
I disagree.
Yeah, you, I think we're generous to this. Or at least
no, I don't think you were watching closely enough.
You took what I see as the flaws of this movie, and you see it as them making a comment on the state of politics.
Yes.
Which I don't agree with.
They were making a comment on the state of politics, about politics being about nothing, about politics being about your birth certificate, you know, instead of about the very real issues that the movie actually does bring up. The movie really does address the issues of campaign finance, super PACs, you know, corporations, you know, shipping jobs overseas. The movie brings up all of these things and, in fact, incorporates it into the plot line and makes the resolution of the film hinge on that kind of stuff. But every time those things come up with the actual candidates, they resort to, they throw it away, and they start talking about sex tapes and punching babies and, you know, shooting each other with crossbows and stuff like that. So what's really happening in this film is the film is shushing this stuff away while at the same time telling you, wait a second, this is the stuff that's important. Now, it's doing it in a way that's very, very palatable to a mainstream audience. Very cartoony. And it could have maybe, I'll give you this, it could have been a little more pronounced about that stuff. It could have made that stuff a little more in the foreground. But it did address that stuff. And I think that in the context of this really, really, really funny movie, it's enough.
I feel like it addresses all of it in a very kind of vacuous way. It acknowledges that it's there, but it doesn't delve into it at all or any of the sort of darker aspects of it. And it resolves everything in a way that's ridiculously...
Could never happen.
Yeah.
Right.
And not even like in a could never happen, but in a sort of making a satirical point about it, but just like
let's drop it.
Yeah, what exactly. Really let's what let everybody say. Leave the audience. Let's let everybody leave the theater smiling.
Right.
So I feel like it is a real failure of nerve, but I will admit that as comedies go, I laughed. I laughed regularly and
consistently
often and,
a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a I'm mixed on it. I feel like it doesn't go where it doesn't follow the map that it draws for itself in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it made me laugh enough that I can't say, oh, don't go see it.
Will Ferrell does the thing that he does really well. Zach Galifianakis does the thing that he does really well.
But
the Ferrell's being
to the point of
smarmy and ridiculous and oblivious, and Zach Galifianakis is being disorienting. And that's what
he
does.
He's being the guy
really
that
well
he too. Always does, the sort of the quasi effeminate.
Well, he's doing the character. He's doing the character that he does, who's supposed to be Zach's twin brother.
Uh huh.
Like you've seen him do it before.
I've never.
He's
seen
like I'm Zach's brother, and he's like an effeminate heterosexual.
Oh, okay. Well, it's the character he plays in Due Date, and pretty much in the Hangover movies, and it's
no, he's not anything like the guys in the Hangover.
And then the Hangover movies, remember, he memorized the Jonas Brothers tour schedule, and
I understand that, but that's it's somewhat different.
It's granted, but it's not too far afield of what we've seen him do in a bunch of other movies, and yeah, Ferrell is basically finding the point where Ricky Bobby, Ron Burgundy, and George W. Bush meet, you
right.
know? So yeah, they're kind of giving us greatest hits, but it's funny stuff. You know, the baby punching thing you've seen in the ad has a really funny payoff later on. I laughed, but I just, it just seemed to me, it made me want to see something like The Candidate, you know, or even.
Well, it's not a comedy.
Yeah, it is. It's
not like
dark
that,
comedy.
Not like this.
No, it's not a broad physical comedy.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
no one's punching a baby or getting shot with a crossbow in that one.
No one gets shot in a crossbow in this one either.
Yeah.
You shot it with a gun.
It was a crossbow.
No, it's a rifle.
You sure?
Yes.
Oh, you know what happens? It's a rifle in the movie. It's a crossbow in the trailer.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, even Smile, I think, was a sharper satire than this movie was. Well, but yeah, I laughed. I laughed, so, you know, I can't completely discount it. A lot before I know you want to do a big bag of viewer mail today, but
But
first I want to acknowledge a bunch of people
died
this
everyone
week.
Is dead now.
Holy crap, a bunch of people died this week. First up, well, two that I actually met during my years at the USA Film Festival. One was director Mel Stewart, who did one of my favorite movies of all time, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. The first movie that I remember seeing as a child in the theater, and I think really shaped my aesthetic in a lot of ways. He had an amazing career.
Oh, you liked Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
Yes, I know. I never mention it. he directed...
Tell me more about... I'm being the meme.
Yes, I get it. Oh. Yes, you can't see the fist at the side of
come
his
on.
Head.
Come on. Keep
sorry, up. I didn't get the joke. Okay. Mel Stewart also directed Wattstax. Did you know that?
You did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And he directed If It's Tuesday, This Must Be Belgium. He did the...
That makes sense.
He did the the Making of the President documentaries in the 60s for David Walper. Like, he had this really amazing career. But yeah, I think Willy Wonka is probably the movie that he's best known for now. I did a Q&A with him at Kid Film one year. He was a hoot. And my DVD recommendation this week is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, because we put out a great edition a couple years ago. It has a commentary track, you know, with the five kids now grown up talking about it. But there's a great sort of making of thing where Mel Stewart talks about, this is one of my favorite stories ever, about how the original last line of the script was, as he put it, "Grandpa says yippee." And he talked about how, like, that wasn't going to work, and they had to track David Seltzer, who was sort of who was the uncredited second writer after Roald Dahl, was off on some fishing vacation in, like, some remote location in Maine somewhere, and they had to track him down and get him to write a new ending for the movie on the phone, like, you know, the one phone that was on a pole somewhere, basically. Anyway, it's a really funny story. You should see it just to hear him tell that story, but Grandpa says yippee has become like a phrase that I use now. Instead of saying, well, whoop-dee-doo or la-dee-da, well, Grandpa says yippee. Also, we also lost this week Marvin Hamlisch, who was an EGOT.
Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he came to...
Took me a second, but...
They say it on 30 Rock all the time. I thought you knew that phrase. Mm-hmm. He came to the USA Film Festival my first year there as artistic director, because he had done the score for a film that nobody ever saw that Robert Wool directed and starred in called Open Season. But, you know, he most famously, composed the score and wrote the song The Way We Were. He did a lot of the music for A Chorus Line. And played a rehearsal pianist in Valley of the Dolls. And it turns out that actually in the 60s, he was a rehearsal pianist. Like, he and Barbara Streisand first met when she was in I Can Get It For You Wholesale, and he was the rehearsal pianist. And that they hit it off, and that was the beginning of their professional collaboration. But yeah, if you watch Valley of the Dolls, the scene where Neely gets fired from Helen Rossum's
show. If we're talking about Alonzo Duralde, it's when you watch Valley of the Dolls, not if you watch Valley of the Dolls.
The scene where Neely gets fired from Helen Lawson's show early on, the guy playing piano while she sings Give a Little More is Marvin Hamlisch. And he's actually...
That's great.
He's in a still of the film that I have, and I should have had him sign it when I met him, but oh well. also lost this week...
Would you like me to sign it?
No.
As him?
No.
For you?
No.
It will almost be like the same thing.
No. This week we also lost Carlo Rambaldi, who created E.T., and the Dino De Laurentiis King Kong and the Aliens and Close Encounters and a bunch of other amazing immortal special effects work. Judith Crist, who was one of the pioneering female film critics in this country. And who was yours?
Anna Piaggi.
Explain.
Noted fashion kook. She was an Italian fashion journalist and really, really well known in that world, and most notable for the fact that she was she dressed like an insane person every day of her life, and she was always a joy to behold because she always looked like she was going to a circus, and she was like, she owned it. And
spell her name if people want to Google her.
Piaggi. And when
Anna.
Yeah, and when the pictures come up, you'll know exactly which one you're looking for. If there's more than one of them out there, because she'll be the one wearing, like a tiny little hat and, you know, the skin of an elephant wrapped around herself. Like, it's, she was, there was, there were few people like her in the world. She's like Isabella Blow, you know, another person who died not too long ago, but who was always, who invariably would walk outside dressed in what people would once upon a time refer to as cockamamie outfits. and you know, people like that are great. I just like people who dress funny. Because I, you know what I mean? Every day of my life, I wear the same thing.
Pretty much.
I have a uniform, you know, boots, jeans, t-shirt. That's kind of my, you know, I don't have a look. I mean, I guess I do, but it's not an interesting one. These women
had looks.
They went for it every single day. There was nothing, you know. Lady Gaga owes everything to women like this.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Also, we also lost this week David Rakoff.
Yes.
Very funny writer, yep. And This American Life contributor. If you get a chance to pick up his book of essays, Fraud, it's very funny. And I loved where he talked about that he went through a period where he would audition to act on TV shows, and he said that his look was always very Jewish or very gay, so that the roles that he generally were auditioning for were either Fudgy McPacker or Jewy McHebrew. Oh, and speaking of books, actually, Mel Stewart wrote a book a few years ago about the making of Willy Wonka, yes, called Pure Imagination.
Yes.
It's, if you're a fan of the movie, you should pick up the book. It's really cool. So anyway, yeah, it's been a cruel summer.
How many minutes have we gone on?
41. We're okay.
Okay. We're going to spend the next 15 to 20. Here's what I learned in Dallas. All day long, every day, for the 6 days I was there, I had nothing to do.
Except watch Rudy
and the Olympics. My mom is in hospice care. She's in bed, like, all day. And sleeps about half of that time. The other half of the time, she's awake and, you know, we're just sort of, you know, chit-chatting about whatever. But, you know, for good chunks of the day, nothing for me to do except sit by the bed and hang out. And so I cleaned up my email inbox.
Ooh.
How
many emails from me were sitting there ignored?
That's a smaller point than how many emails were in my inbox. Mm-hmm. Can you guess?
1,000.
Oh. 5,000. You're so funny.
Do tell.
I had 2,300 emails in my inbox. And
all unread or just
opened
and ignored?
I read some of them. I read the ones that are from you, obviously, all the ones from you.
Oh, really?
And they become the most prioritized pieces of information.
You can't even say that with a straight face.
Here's what I did, though. You're going to be so proud of me. I took all the ones that came from this show that you forwarded on to me, mm-hmm, that I was supposed to read on the air,
yes,
and somehow missed. And now they're in their own file.
Ooh.
In chronological order. Do you realize that we have been behaving in a very haphazard manner regarding our listener emails?
Well, I didn't want to use them all up. I thought maybe
There's no using them all up.
I thought the source would dry up at some point.
We are backlogged in a way that is embarrassing and actually insulting to the people who listen to this show.
Well, we never guarantee we're going to read every single letter on the air.
Oh, but we have email dating back to June we haven't touched.
Great.
And I am committed
to
catching up.
Okay.
So for the next 15-ish minutes until the end, because I've already given you my DVD recommendation of the week.
Which was?
Rudy.
Oh.
Here's some emails. I'm going to start with the beginning. I'm just going to read them. Some of them are top 10 lists. We got a lot that are top 10 lists.
Okay.
But
I was hoping we were going to talk about the knifeness of the Sight and Sound list, but we'll save that for next week.
Okay, I'm scrolling down to my file. I'm clicking on my file. I'm clicking date to make my file go backwards.
Like a big boy.
Here we go. starting with June 14th, did we get the Christopher Bragg? Did we do his? I don't think we did.
Dude, I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't. Here he goes. I'm really only able to rank what I consider my top three. Number three, Heathers. Number two, Run Lola Run. Number one, The Pillow Book. Which means that he likes naked people.
There's no naked people in Heathers.
In The Pillow Book, it's all naked people.
Trust me, I know.
It's dongs and boobies and everything. It's all the kinds of parts.
Well, two of those three films were featured in my book, 101 Must-See Movies for Gay Men.
Yes. So
I'm in.
Guess which two. Then, some others I found by scrolling through movies I've rated on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Anatomy. A film I was not happy about.
I thought you liked Anatomy.
I did not like Anatomy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Well, didn't that guy do some other movie that you
But
thought
I can't
was...
remember now why I didn't like it. I just remember I didn't like
didn't
it.
Didn't that guy do some other movie
so long
that
ago.
You liked? That was set in the U.S. about, like, medical students.
Oh, yeah. What was that called?
It had, like, Alyssa Milano or
something.
Yeah.
Alyssa Milano and Milo Ventimiglia.
Yes, that one.
What was that called?
I don't remember.
You go look that up.
I can't. I can't do it on this computer.
Oh, I see. Well, we'll take care of that later.
Okay.
Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, Friday the 13th, Scream, Final Destination, all of them. 12 Monkeys, After Hours, Who's That Girl, The Fall. Interesting, The Fall. I don't think it's a good movie.
It's nice to look at.
But it looks great. Yeah.
And I'm one of the world's few defenders of Who's That Girl.
I enjoy, you know what? I enjoyed Who's That Girl. We've talked about that before. Weekend at Bernie's.
Okay.
Weekend at Bernie's is chasing you right now. Have you noticed this? Weekend at Bernie's keeps dogging your existence.
How so?
Because it keeps coming up. Like, they're screening it now in Repertory, Midnights and stuff. Like,
well,
Cinefamily.
Yeah, for all the people that were eight when it premiered on cable, I think.
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
It's really funny.
Okay.
Because he's dead, see? And they keep dragging him around. High Art. Flirting with Disaster. Poltergeist 3. And then he writes, and I just saw that I gave I Know Who Killed Me 5 stars, so I'm going to stop looking at my ratings now. Look, you don't have to be ashamed of your love for I Know Who Killed Me. Because I Know Who Killed Me is a badass.
Yeah.
That may be Lindsay Lohan's finest hour.
Well, let's don't get crazy.
What else is better?
The Parent Trap.
No.
Mean Girls.
Okay, fine. Mean Girls is fine. But I Know Who Killed Me.
I Know Who Killed Me. Look, I'm not quibbling with I Know Who Killed Me.
I Know Who Killed Me.
I should call it her finest hour.
I Know Who Killed Me is one of the most memorable, fun...
Bad movies we love.
Crazy movies. Yeah. If you haven't seen I Know Who Killed Me, please do yourself a favor and see I Know Who Killed Me. You too, like our friend Christopher, will give it 5 stars in your mind.
Yes. Yeah. I do quibble with the, well, he says Final Destination, all of them.
Yeah, well, two is amazing.
Four is awful.
Four is not great.
Five is good.
Awesome.
Makes up for it.
Yeah.
Four is bleh.
All right. Brian of Rupert Pupkin Speaks. Did we ever do his top 10? I don't think we did we?
Dude, you're Mr. Organizer here. I don't
well, these are the ones
me,
that
so
I have never
say.
Deleted. So if we've done this one before, then you know we'll. I'm sorry that we did not rate your movies on how knife they were. Everyone this week is 100% knife. We just want to get through all the emails.
Fine.
You're all 100% knife or 100% linoleum. Depending on what you would like to be. Number one, The Thing, 1982. Mm-hmm. Rio Bravo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Gift, which I have never seen.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen
no,
it?
No, I have not.
W.C. Fields movie.
We have done this one, I think.
We have?
We talked about how I haven't seen a lot of W.C. Fields movies. What else is on this?
The Apartment,
mm-hmm.
The Long Goodbye,
mm-hmm.
Dog
mm-hmm.
Soup,
mm-hmm.
The Conversation,
mm-hmm.
The King of Comedy. I mean, obviously, there's going to be the King of Comedy on this list. His blog is called
Rupert Pupkin Speaks. Indeed.
Yeah, RupertPupkinSpeaks.blogspot.com if you would like to go to Brian's blog. It's you get his top 50.
Yes. And you can follow him on Twitter at Bob Friedlander.
Yeah. The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp, which I cannot pass judgment on because when I watched it, I fell dead asleep. And it's not the movie's fault.
You were just tired.
I just was just tired.
I was not I was not a fan of that one. There's a lot of Powell Pressburger that I love, but that's not one of them.
And the Maltese Falcon.
Great.
Falcon. Falcon.
Falcon. Falcon, yeah. Either one.
The next one is from Patrick Kellogg. Born 1969, New York, New York. That's what it says at the bottom of his email. Number one, Brazil.
Yay.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
I love that movie. No one's seen that one, but it's really good.
Well, he has, and now you two have something to talk about.
There you go.
In person. Heathers. Great. That's another Heathers vote. Mm-hmm. Risky Business.
Totally.
You were kind of obsessed with Risky Business. I was kind of obsessed with
Risky Business.
I don't understand that.
Because it was my senior year of high school, so okay. I was going through a lot of... Because
I'm not a huge fan of that.
That movie came out...
I don't really have an opinion about it.
I saw that movie at the end of summer, right before going into my senior year of high school. So all of those obsessions about getting into college and stuff rang very true. I was a frustrated virgin with a crush on Tom Cruise.
I'm sorry. Say that again, please.
No.
Say that again, please.
No, I will not.
Crush on Tom Cruise.
Yeah. 1983 Tom Cruise.
Can you explain yourself?
This is before he was a lunatic.
How old were you?
16.
All right, I guess I'll give you...
He was hot.
I guess. I don't know.
You have to divorce yourself from all of the Tom Cruise baggage that we now have.
But even then... In 1980, what, three?
Three.
Okay, how old was I? 19?
Yeah.
18, 19? 19. And I had an inkling in the back of my head that dudes might be, you know, my thing.
Uh-huh.
Tom Cruise was not turning my head.
All right, well, he didn't mind. No, I mean, just even down to the little details, like there's that great scene where...
John Matuzak was doing
Okay, fine, whatever. You're one of those. There's that great scene where he's taking sneaking his dad's Porsche out of the house for the first time.
Yeah.
And the score is going like, dun, 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 dun. And then it stops because the car has stalled and he has to start it again. I was learning to drive stick at around that period and would stall with some frequency. So just even little moments like that, I just felt like, oh my God, this movie is really nailing my life right now.
This is John Matuzak in Playgirl.
Yes.
I just pulled it up on Google. You going to argue with me?
I'm not. All right. I'm just saying. I'm not one of those guys who was drawn to like beefy beardos from the moment I hit puberty.
Anyway, keep going. Tell me more about your thing.
No, that's it. I liked Risky Business.
All right.
And then that spring, 16 Candles came out. It was like, you know, those were...
Time Bandits.
Sure, yes.
War Games.
Yes.
Henry V.
Or, as my friend Kurt Holman would like to call it, Hank Sank.
I have a great Henry V story.
Oh, go on.
Okay. I saw Henry V in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I was visiting New York... and I can't remember now what the circumstances were. It was was 89, 90, whenever it came out.
Yeah.
And it was like Christmas time. I was, oh, you know what? My college friend Blake had moved up there with his girlfriend, and they were living up there together. And I was visiting them just to hang out and have, you know, Christmas up there with them. And for some reason or other, they were both busy doing something one night. It was work-related, and I was like, I'll entertain myself. And I just went to the movies. I went to see Henry V. And this was like New York City, the late 80s, early 90s, and those ridiculous public service announcements about, let's talk about AIDS, were happening. And they were all geared, to everybody who was not gay. Everybody who was not, you know, a person of color or anything like...
Everybody who assumed that it was never going to happen to them.
Yeah, everybody who assumed it would never happen to them. These were PSAs that were meant to, like, reassure them that, no, it really will never happen to you. And so the PSA was so crazy. It was like this very sort of conventional, you know, husband and wife in bed at night. And she's like reading a magazine or whatever. She's like, I'm so scared of AIDS. And he says something to her. I'm paraphrasing this, but he has something to her, says something to her like,
I used a condom with my mistress.
Yeah, no. He says something like, how long have we been married? She's like, oh, 15 years or whatever. And he's like, have you ever been unfaithful to me? Well, no, of course not. Well, me neither. There.
The end.
The voiceover guy says something like, talking about AIDS is the first step to understand. It's something,
oh,
you know.
God.
And this
However,
dude.
I've been injecting drugs for the last 12
this
years.
This dude in the back of the theater. Shouts at the top of his lungs, kiss my black ass. And the whole theater.
Thank you, Larry Kramer.
And the whole theater laughed. And that guy was great. I wish I knew who that guy was. And so, okay, Highlander. This is an awesome movie. Highlander is awesome.
Oh, God.
The Princess Bride.
Sure.
And Funny Bones from 1995.
I love Funny Bones.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's really good. It's, Peter, oh, who's that director? He made Funny Bones, and then he did, oh, no, wait, sorry, take it back. I haven't seen Funny Bones. That's the one.
What are you talking
that's
about,
that's the
then?
One with Jerry Lewis and.
Yeah, Jerry Lewis and Oliver Platt.
Oliver Platt.
Yeah.
No, I love Hear My Song, which is the same director as his previous film.
All right.
I need to see Funny Bones. But I love Hear My Song.
Okay. Here is a letter and a top 10.
Okay.
Yes, I did almost turn you off after the first 3 minutes. Obviously, that was Alonso's fault.
You probably picked the music, though.
And then I did almost turn you off after the first 18 minutes. Again, Alonso's
all
fault.
All you.
But I hung in there for your Prometheus review. I have a need to listen to all things Prometheus. It has struck a chord in my soft nerd sci-fi fan heart. That being said, I have now subscribed to your podcast.
Yay!
Thank you. Wait a second. Who's this from?
Who's this from?
Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
We're glad you stuck it out.
Also, for your information, I found your podcast via What the Flick, Slight Crush on Christy Lemire. Wait, maybe I did read this one once before.
No, I don't know.
Actually, you know what? I think I did because he talks about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And we did discuss that once before.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You remember this better than I do.
But here's the list just in case. You know, we didn't. Empire Strikes Back, Aliens, Fiddler on the Roof, RoboCop, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, The Right Stuff, 2001, The Godfather Part II, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I'm trying to figure out what Fiddler on the Roof has in common with the rest of those, but great, okay.
It's long.
Yeah, true, yes. I saw it as a kid. It had an intermission and everything. It was the roadshow version. I think I still have the program book somewhere.
Sean says, thanks for taking the time to reply back to me, Alonzo. I've been a big fan of yours since you first appeared on What the Flick.
Well, all right.
As to your point about Pacino and Jack and Jill, I concur. The scene where he explained to Jill that he probably should have more Oscars was absolutely hilarious. And I even liked the Dunkachino rap scene, even though it was blatant product placement. There's something
that was
about,
funny.
There's something about how insane Pacino is willing to go, even for crap like Jack and Jill, that I admire. His dedication even to vomit-inducing cinema is one of the reasons he is a great actor. As to Mr. Depp, who's having a poor year, I guess Al must have asked him to appear because they are friends from their Donnie Brasco days. Jack and Jill and Dark Shadows. What happened to the Ed Woods and the Sweeney Todds? Depp needs to get his act together and make a movie with a coherent script and a story worth telling. I'll grant him the pirate flicks here and there to pay the bills, as if he has monetary issues. And because he likes playing Jack Sparrow. But he's been selling out recently. Actually, come to think of it, he was great in Rango. That's true. Rango is fantastic. Rango is
he's
so terrific. Rango is a great adult animated feature. It ain't for kids.
I'm not a fan of Rango.
You're wrong.
Yeah, whatever.
For my money, it's been over a year since this guy has done something worthwhile. On a totally different note, I got a DVD of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, and I've watched it 3 times in the past 3 days. I love that movie, and Gary Oldman can make anything, no matter how mundane, interesting. There's a deleted scene on the DVD that consists of Gary Oldman sitting alone in a room making an egg, and it's fascinating.
Now I gotta get that DVD.
Yeah, you do.
No one will be seated during the egg preparation scene.
Reese says, top 10 list, Imitation of Life, 1939.
Oh, the original, okay.
Which I have not seen.
I don't think I have not seen that version either, with the Claudette Colbert one.
Yeah. Shawshank Redemption, which you hate and I love.
Boo.
Glitter, the Riff Tracks commentary.
With Mary Jo.
With Mary Jo. Fight Club. Unbreakable. Gattaca. Capricorn 1.
Woo!
Which I
fun.
Saw as a child.
Me too.
And super into it.
Is it like a child's first conspiracy thriller?
Tell No One.
Okay.
Boy A. Did you see Boy
A? I didn't see Boy A.
I didn't see Boy A either. Andrew Garfield and Peter Mullen?
Peter Mullen, yeah.
Clueless.
Sure.
And Food, Inc.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'll tell you what food documentary I like the best, though.
Oh, yeah.
Our Daily Bread. If you've never seen Our Daily Bread, it's mesmerizing.
But it's not the same as Food, Inc.
No, it is not the same as Food, Inc.
Food, Inc. is a piece of journalism, and Our Daily Bread is a piece of art.
Yes, yes. Food, Inc. tells you things that you should know.
Yeah.
Food, Inc. is a good movie that tells you a lot of stuff that you need to know in order to not die of food. Our Daily Bread genuinely is a work of art. There's almost no talking in Our Daily Bread. There's negligible conversation in Our Daily Bread. It's visual. It's almost purely visual. But the things that you see will shake you to your core. And so I cannot recommend Our Daily Bread highly enough. It's kind of difficult to find.
Was it ever released on DVD in the U.S.?
I don't know. Maybe. Mm. I'll have to look that up.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going to write that note down to myself. Here, look up. Give me some paper.
A piece of paper. Hang on. I will look on my phone.
All right. So, yeah. Another list that is 100% knife, except for Shawshank Redemption, which Alonzo hates.
I thought everybody was 100% knife this week.
Well, you know, but you've all gone on record as really being hateful toward Shawshank
Redemption. I have, it's true.
And it's because you deny the Holocaust. Anyway,
no,
so... because
that movie is bollocks.
The next one is from Ben.
Okay.
I listen to the podcast streaming through iTunes, and I always have to crank the volume. Alonzo's level is usually softer but consistent. Dave is louder, but when he moves away from the mic, the drop-off is dramatic. Hmm. Lots of things I do are dramatic.
Or wrong.
The way I live is... Actually, it's not. Top 10...
No, Our Daily Bread is not only on DVD, it's on Amazon Instant Video.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, wow, you should totally watch it. Everybody watch Our Daily Bread.
Directed by Nicholas Gerhalter.
All right, top 10, no particular order. I'll add a brief justification to the ones I think might be called into question. Number 1, Kelly's Heroes.
Never seen it.
I have. It's great. A heist movie with a twist. All the other W2 movies I've seen are full of noble causes and racing around to foil the Axis. In this one, the noble cause is to foil the Nazis by stealing their gold.
Is that Don Siegel?
I don't know. The good guys were all flawed, dickish even, instead of the noble soldiers I was used to seeing in war movies. Even the cannon fodder characters were fleshed out fairly well. The obstacles encountered were just as likely to come from U.S. forces, blown bridges, friendly fire, as encountering the enemy. There was a good balance throughout of action, tension, and comedy. Who knew Don Rickles could act? Plus, it's one of the only movies that my dad and I both like.
Sorry, not to drag us backwards. Pathology.
Yeah!
Is the movie from the guy that did Anatomy, right?
Pathology is insane.
Yeah.
Pathology is the I Know Who Killed Me of...
Med students
working with cadavers films. Please witness Pathology.
Oh, wait, no. But the guy who directed Pathology did not direct Anatomy. Why am I connecting those two movies?
Why are you connecting them?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. I didn't like Anatomy, but I love Pathology. With Alyssa Milano and Milo Ventimiglia. And it did play theatrically. I saw it in a theater.
And do you know who wrote it?
Who wrote Pathology?
Yeah. Neville Dean and Taylor.
That makes sense.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah. I'm going to keep reading this list now.
Go ahead.
You done interrupting me?
Carry on.
Yeah. Two, The Thing, again, the John Carpenter one. Mm-hmm. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Sure. Young Frankenstein. Yes. Dr. Strangelove.
Great.
Female Trouble.
Great.
The Abominable Dr. Fives.
Female Trouble, which I always like to point out, is the only movie that is featured in both of my books.
Yes. Foul Play.
I loved it when I was a kid. It doesn't hold up so much.
Honor Majesty's Secret Service, which is one of the coolest James Bond movies. And I really, I'm Ben and I are now friends because his number 10 is a tie.
Uh-huh.
Godzilla versus Hedorah.
Great.
Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
Are those your two favorites?
Destroy All Monsters.
I was
going to
say, yeah.
Then Hedorah.
Yeah.
Then Mecha.
Hmm. Yeah.
Then Megalon. Good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That all sounds.
Yeah. I tried my best to avoid a tie. Hedorah is awesome because it has all of those weird cut scenes and animation. Plus, the film actually tries to deliver a message in between all of the kaiju fighting. Then again, this is the one where Godzilla learns to fly using his atomic breath, so coolness points gets taken away. On the other hand, Mecha G was the very first Godzilla film I ever saw in its entirety in a theater. I'd usually catch the tail end of one on a Saturday afternoon on TV. I was 5 or 6 when this one came to town, and my mom took me to the matinee.
Oh, you know what?
It was a packed house and completely amazing on big screen.
And I bet that he saw it under the title Godzilla versus the Bionic Monster.
Versus the Bionic Monster,
I remember it opened like that in my theater until they got sued.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the $6 million man
cause for a lawsuit.
Sued them over the word bionic, and that's why they had to they had to pull it. Yeah.
How many minutes have we gone?
We're okay still.
What? Tell me.
We're at 66.
All right. One more, and then we're gonna keep doing this. You're gonna keep forwarding me.
I always
the emails, every single one that we get. I'm gonna put them in this file, and we're gonna bust through these, and we're gonna catch up. We promise that if you emailed us, we're gonna catch up. No more haphazard jumping around.
Okay.
No more. No, we've got a method now, a methodology, a dangerous method, is what we're doing now. Kevin Drake says, "I listen to your podcast one of two ways: downloaded from iTunes or from the links on linoleumknife.libsyn.com. Both come out great for me. I hear you both fine and clear. The only time it gets hard to hear you guys, if you're away from the mic or yelling across the room. Sometimes I got to take something off the stove. I don't know. I have compiled my list of top 10 films. I have trouble making any film the ultimate number one." Me too.
That's a tricky one.
"So I ordered my favorite film per decade, starting with 1920s and working up to the current decade. So, his favorite film of the 20s, Metropolis."
Sure.
It's fantastic. "His favorite film of the 30s, The Wizard of Oz."
Hmm.
Which I love. You love less.
Yes.
"Rope" from 1948.
Whoa, really? Okay.
Yep. 1954, Seven Samurai.
Okay.
1960, La Dolce Vita.
Hmm.
Yeah, you would thought, on La Dolce Vita.
It's no 8.5.
It's the greatest. It's my favorite Fellini film, La Dolce Vita.
I think it's overrated.
You're overrated.
So is your face.
1975, Nashville.
Great.
Yep. 1982, Blade Runner.
Okay.
1995, this is great, Ghost in the Shell.
Okay.
Which really is a tremendous anime.
Mm.
It's so great. I often don't think about it, though. When someone says, "What are your favorite movies of the 90s? And sometimes people do ask me that.
Mm.
I always say Safe and Gummo. and I always forget about Ghost in the Shell.
Ghost in the Shell was The Matrix before The Matrix was The Matrix.
True. Yes. 2007, There Will Be Blood.
Okay.
2012, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Mm, okay.
But he's got, you know, he's got 8 more years. That, yeah, that could change. That,
indeed.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Love the show. Keep doing what you do.
No, oh, well,
we will. Dave. No, he didn't say Dave.
No. Your need for affirmation is pathetic.
All right. So we have a lot more to go, but we're going to catch them up.
All right. Okay. Great. Look, I've been sending you this stuff. I'm glad you finally got it organized. Finally bothered to read my email.
I had time. I finally had time.
Okay.
I finally had the moment to get her done. To get her done.
Great.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, we thank you all for listening. And as always, want to point you to our friends in the podcast world, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. Again, Popcorn Mafia, it's done for now anyway.
It's over, yeah.
But
you know what we forgot to talk about? What? We'll talk about it next week.
What?
Dark Horse.
Oh, right. Yes, we'll talk about it next week. But Popcorn Mafia, I think apparently the last episode was such an epic undertaking that it's going to be carved into several episodes, like The Hobbit. So, you know, you can still be tuning in for the next few weeks, and there will be new shows.
Are you on the last? Did you go?
Called in.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash with That Chris Gore, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can, of course, subscribe to this show, like our listener who didn't think he was going to like us at first did.
Thank you for giving us 18 minutes to stop annoying you.
Yes. And if you like the show, please leave us a review there. That would be super awesome. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com. You can like us at Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at getglue.com and drop us a letter or a top 10 list or a comment or a question or a suggestion. We are making, as you can see, a renewed effort to get to all of our...
Not a renewed effort, a first attempt.
Well, we're making an
extra... We haven't done anything well up until this moment.
We've been reading listener mail. We just haven't been...
Things are going to be different now.
Fine, Mr. Thorough. Anyway, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we will catch you next time.
Goodbye.